If you find politics and current events to be exhausting, check out Hard Nation, another really great show here on Earwolf. Hosted by the Hard Brothers, a.k.a. Mike Still and Paul Welsh, Hard Nation features some of your favorite comedians performing as politicians and public figures. Hear Will Hines play Sean Spicer, Darcy Carden as Jill Stein, and Casey Fay as Eric Trump. They even had Anthony Atamanuk on a special episode as Trump. It's a really fun show, so go listen as soon as this episode's over, and subscribe to Hard Nation in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you like to listen.
Hey, here's something cool at Earwolf. It's a very special episode of Chris Gethard's podcast, Beautiful Stories from Anonymous People, with special guest co-host Katie Couric. This podcast, Beautiful Anonymous, is where comedian Chris Gethard takes your anonymous phone calls. They'll talk to people like a queer caller going through one of the most meaningful and stressful transitions in life, a caller who quit his dead-end job live on the air to pursue his dreams, and a Black Army veteran from Charlottesville who called to talk about confronting white supremacists. Subscribe to Beautiful Stories from Anonymous People in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen.
I got out of my car, and I spoke to the dog, like you do, you know, friendly-like. I said, hey, boy. And he didn't trot down the steps. He leapt off the landing and came running toward me.
Hey folks, it's Brandon Johnson. You probably know me as DJ Ol' Youngin or Mr. Goldenfold on Rick and Morty, but today I'm here on Cracked Gets Personal with my co-host Robert Evans. He runs Cracked's hit personal experience article section, which wraps journalism up in a sweet, sweet nougaty shell of comedy. Today, he and I are here to talk about something distinctly unfunny. Cops shooting dogs. I know, that's a dark as fuck subject. But don't worry, it's my job to mine some humor and humanity out of the subject, while Robert mines actual human beings for their stories. Speaking of humans, Robert, what do we have today?
So, first let's introduce our sources. We'll be talking with, today, two women who had their dogs shot and killed by police officers, a Homeland Security officer who's going to help us understand what dogs mean to a cop raiding a home, and lastly, a woman who advises police on how to kill fewer dogs. It also happened she was a former canine cop, had to kill a dog on the job, and was mauled by a dog off the job, and she currently trains dogs for competition. So a pretty broad breadth of experiences there. First off, here's Valeria Rios. She lost her beloved dog, Angelo, last year.
We were at a birthday party. When I was coming back home, I noticed that our door to our backyard was open. I'm out there for about 15 minutes looking for them, and then I pull up to the apartment, and I see officers, like patrol cars. So I started asking people that were around the apartment, asked them, have you guys seen two big old dogs wandering around? And one of the kids said, yeah, about 5 minutes ago, we were just petting them. And then by that time, my dad was already talking to one of the cops. And sure enough, they were there looking for my dogs. So I go up to the police officer, and right away, he tells me that one of them was shot on his leg and that he got taken to the emergency room and that he should be fine. So they give me like this big old fat ticket, and I'm right away go to the hospital. And when I talk to the vet, she tells me that he was shot in the face and not in his leg.
Hey, I know this is all rough to hear. I just wanted to promise that it does get lighter from here on out. There are jokes. There is funny. It's a serious topic, but don't worry. It's not going to be this brutal the whole time.
So they tell me supposedly that Angelo had attacked a lady and she was bit. But when they show me the report, it says on there that the lady, she wasn't bit. She says on her report that her dog scratched her, which caused her to bleed, and then both my dogs just take off. Like, no one was bit, no one was hurt. The officer, when he shot him, said that Angelo was about to attack, and he was growling, and ears were pinned back, and, like, ready to, like, attack him. So I ask for the reports and ask for the body cam. So I finally got the video, and sure enough, on the video it shows, but I mean, this officer was just, I think he was just an asshole. He went to the apartment. Before he even got out of his car, these were his exact words, I'm gonna get this motherfucker. He loads his gun before he gets out of his car. He's out of his car for like 5 seconds, 10 seconds. Luna is sitting next to his car. Angelo is walking around, wagging his tail, barking at him, and then just boom, just shoots him. And it takes him 20 minutes to find him. So this whole time he's bleeding out, he's in pain. He's crying, and then they find him outside outside this door from an apartment.
So as you can tell, this is going to be a really fun podcast for our comedy website.
Yeah, it's important that people remember that there are hilarious moments in every part of life. Mm-hmm. We will find them for you when I finish drying my tears.
Yeah.
I think the funniest thing so far, though, is that someone lied and said that they shot a dog in the leg.
Yeah.
We've always said, as people who are shot at, how come the cops don't shoot people in their legs? And the response has always been, if you ever look at a target in a firing range, it has no legs on it. They only shoot to kill. You also will notice that you don't have anything in your possession that resembles anything that a cop has in his possession. So if a cop is carrying it, you probably shouldn't be. And cops carry dogs. So when a cop rolls up and he sees that you have the same weapon that he has, first thing he's going to do is neutralize that weapon. I don't care if it licks his face. All he sees is teeth.
That's an interesting point. And I think it's probably a good time now for us to watch this video, because this is one of those things we don't
never
have to,
a good time.
We don't have to take Valeria's word for it, though. Like, we've got the dash cam video so often, pretty much all the time, when it's an officer-involved shooting, it's like, well, it's the cop's word versus everybody else's word, and certain people are always going to take the cop's word over anybody else's word, but we've got the fucking video, so yeah. Let's roll that shit.
There are new developments in the case of an Aurora woman whose dog was shot by police. Officers claim dogs owned by Valeria Rios were acting aggressively after they got loose last month. But Rios and her attorney say video from that incident tells a different story. Melissa.
Body cam video shows police arriving to the scene of a call of pit bulls who had gotten loose from their backyard, allegedly attacking someone outside of this Aurora complex.
I'll put this mother down in a minute.
A responding officer says these two dogs jumped up on his cruiser. He soon gets out and claims in a police report that this 3-year-old American Staffordshire Terrier growled and took an attack stance. You can hear gunfire. Followed by whimpering, as another officer's camera records the dog getting shot in the face and running off.
Okay, I had to shoot one. He came right at me.
That's the video. Seems pretty clear to me he's not in danger.
Not unless he's afraid of getting his face licked or seeing a tail wag too hard at him.
Because it's a dog doing the thing where the dog's moving at the side, so he's trying to keep, but he's not, the dog wasn't advancing on him, the dog wasn't charging him, the dog was not doing anything I recognize as aggressive.
Yeah, I think that they think of it like you're clearing a gun from a scene. So nobody ever, if they take a gun off of a person, they throw it on the ground. They don't go, let's not damage the pearl handle. And it's unfortunate that they're put in positions where they have to make decisions like that. But this is very clear that this cop didn't have to make that decision. He could have, as usual, what we always say is, you know, you could have stayed in the car, bro.
Yeah, you didn't, no one needed, you could have stayed in the metal vehicle.
Right.
Nobody was immediately in danger there.
Even on the Mike Brown situation, the shooting in Ferguson, mm-hmm. the situation was the same, where you could have stayed in your car, bro. I can see if you're out and you're trying to talk to people about it, but honestly, I'm so glad that we got that video, and he sounded like a fucking idiot.
He did. There's a picture going around social media, because I have a bunch of conservative and a bunch of liberal friends, and one of the things that I see being shared on, like, sort of the right-wing side of Facebook is this picture of, or it's a little video of there's one man with a machete in the UK, and like 30 British cops, and they're in just a big circle around him. Everybody, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. And everyone's like, see, this is how silly police officers are there, because they don't have guns, but I'm like, that's what I want. I want 30 guys to swarm that dude and make sure he can't hurt anyone, but also not shoot him to death?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is the problem with officers only having limited options. Someone should have called the Bureau of Animals or the ASPCA and mm-hmm. said, we got to trank that dog before we can move into a scene. Somebody should have been a cop that sort of sits down, looks at the situation and goes, we're going to need a different kind of officer to respond to this call. Because if the reason that they were there was to handle an animal, why aren't they given the tools to handle animals?
Well, we're going to be answering all those questions further on in the podcast. But first, let's hear from Stacy. She also lost a dog in another fucking tragedy.
My name is Stacy Fields and I'm from Baltimore, Maryland. On New Year's Day of 2013, the officers were chasing a suspect in our alley, but he ran into our yard, and subsequently the police officers shot my dog and killed him. Apparently, they were called to a house at the top of our street. They were called for, I guess it was some kind of domestic dispute that happened in that house. When they arrived at the house up the street, the man ran out of the back door, which then took him straight into the alley of our house. And he ran into the yard next to us because they didn't have a gate, and then jumped into from their front yard over the fence into our yard. And Kincaid went outside thinking it was the neighbor, I'm assuming, because she always gave him treats when she came outside. And he started barking. So my stepfather went outside to find out what he was barking at. And there was an officer in the yard at the top of the stairs, and then an officer in the alley. And the officer in the alley yelled for my stepfather to get Kincaid. And as he was reaching for Kincaid's collar, the officer in the yard turned and opened fire, shot 6 times, and hit Kincaid 3 of those times. The officers, after everything was done and over and they apprehended the guy, the suspect that was in our yard, they tried to say that Kincaid was charging the officer that was inside of the yard.
I love that they use the same lie for people.
Yeah. He was coming right for me. Yeah.
It doesn't matter what's going on. If something approaches an officer, the first thing they think to do is, well, we're going to shoot that. Mm-hmm. That. Just the operative that. Yeah. I'm like, no, that's why we don't have any aliens, why nobody's ever spotted a ghost, is because as soon as something pops up that a cop doesn't know what it is, he shoots it.
Yeah, it's weird because it's like the thing I've always told is like these guys are out there to protect us. And that to me implies that they're taking on risk for themselves. Like if it's truly a job that's selfless, you're accepting a greater degree of risk. And part of that would mean maybe taking some risk onto yourself that something bad happens to you rather than immediately shooting things.
But you should also understand risk at this point. I would think that if you're in the field every day, you do understand that there are environmental things that can make your job end, and that you'd know that better than me. If cops had ever come forward and said, the reason we do is this, and we need this from the public, then I'd be more on their side about the times they discharge their weapon. But from what I can tell, they primarily use that thing as an eraser, not a de-escalator, but as a let's stop the problem right there.
And I will say, you know, Stacy's story is one where it's a lot more plausible to me that maybe the dog did. Like, you know, the police officer, you're chasing a suspect, you wind up in somebody's backyard. I can see a dog charging. It's not the dog's fault, because that's what a dog's supposed to do when a stranger hops into your yard.
Right.
Is come at them. I can see that being maybe the dog did charge him. Maybe he needed to, maybe something had to happen there, and it was just a tragedy, and there was no way to avoid it. You know, I think it's important to talk to folks like Valeria and Stacy, who got the short end of the stick from the long arm of the law. But if we're actually going to answer the question of why are all these cops shooting all of these dogs, we've kind of got to talk to cops.
We're not going to talk to dogs?
No, I tried that. It's just terrible pickup on the mics. It didn't work out well. It's going to be a great podcast for our series of podcasts to scare cats to.
Great.
But not so good for this one. But we did talk to a cop. The first cop we've got is, we'll call him Dave. That's a pseudonym. He works for the Department of Homeland Security. He's a real nice guy and a fan of the site, and he agreed to take on the shitty job of being the first cop on here to try and answer the question, why are cops shooting dogs? So we should appreciate that. It's not an easy, fun position to be in.
Next time we'll come up with a much better pseudonym for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if we got the ability to rename a cop, it should be something like King Marshmallow or the Happy Meal Guy.
King Marshmallow. Okay, well, let's see what King Marshmallow, the Happy Meal guy, has to say about why cops are shooting dogs.
There's no good answer, and I hate to have to say that, because as an ethical human being, I think it's horrible that a person would have to shoot a dog, or just would choose to shoot a dog, whether they did or whether they had to or not. So, sadly, I really don't have a compelling answer, and I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I'll simply say that, federally speaking, I think most of the instances in the research I've seen where police engage in dog shootings, it seems to be happening at like the local police department levels. And I don't know if that is because it has not been litigated at the federal level, or if they don't want it to be litigated, so they want to avoid the practice. But I will tell you that in Homeland Security, if somebody shoots a dog, they had better have a very compelling reason to have done so. And I mean, it's going to be a problem no matter what.
He pointed out that there's a lot to consider in this question beyond just cops murdering dogs, because clearly some of them do. I think that first guy probably just wanted to shoot something. But I also think there's way too many cops shooting dogs for them all to be nuts. Here's Dave.
We don't know what baggage the cops already have. Are they already afraid of dogs? Have they had some weird experience with dogs in the past that has influenced those decisions? But I will also say that I don't want to defend the shooting of dogs, but I will try to defend, in general, a policy that might result in that. And by simply saying that everybody's dog is sweet, everybody's dog is wonderful around kids, and whenever I hear about a dog attack where some old lady gets dragged off her lawnmower and have her throat torn out by two Dobermans, the person who is interviewed by the police who owns the dogs will frequently explain, they've never done this, they're great dogs, they're good with children.
And that's a good point. Every dog owner claims their dog would never hurt anyone, but some dogs do.
But there's a level of bias even in that statement. You could hear it in his voice, which was, you know, before we get started, I want to let you know that most people are lying. And there's a party that says, okay, well, before we get started, I want to let you know that most cops are lying when they discharge their weapon. So we already have a huge disconnect between what they consider to be fair and what they think is unfair. They're like, we're cleaning up the house as we go into this situation. So I get that. But again, I'm just like, bruh, you need a second set of options as to how you clean. Not everything gets Lysol and bleach. Some things just need a little Windex. I think the reason that the FBI comes into your house, they don't shoot your dog, is that they know you have one because they've been watching your house.
Yeah.
Whereas a local cop's like, I don't have the manpower or support for this shit.
I do think that it's a good point that in a situation, like animals behave unpredictably in new situations. And if the cops are raiding your house or whatever, hop into your backyard, you can't guess. We don't really get how dogs think. Like, they're animals. Like, people are unpredictable too. So I guess they're no more unpredictable than us. But that's a good point, at least, that Mike brings up.
Swap out dogs for teenagers. And we have the same issue. What we know is that cops shoot too much. We're also super unhappy that they shoot our dogs.
Let's hear from Dave again.
We have no idea what's going on in a dog's mind when it sees something, alerts it, and it just goes into a mode of attack. So sadly, and of course, there's no way to interview a dog. We don't ever really get that explanation. But I will just say, for the sake of fairness, I guess, that we have to bear in mind that we can't necessarily anticipate their behavior in every situation based on their behavior in other situations that we've experienced up to that point. I sound really great right now as I defend shooting dogs.
It's probably worth pointing out, I think, that everything he said about dogs, if you replace dogs with police officers, is equally true. Or any other person. Like, yeah.
Cats are a much larger mystery than dogs. You do know what dogs are thinking about. Licking you, food, ball.
Yeah.
A cat, I'd be more suspect. The cat might actually have a series of highly tiered espionage coming against you. The
cats have an agenda.
Right.
Yeah. Dogs can react unpredictably, but they don't plan.
Right.
Yeah. I did want to kind of get into what a justified shooting of a dog by a police officer can look like. So I talked to a former canine police officer, current dog trainer, and she currently helps teach police departments to kill fewer dogs. So that's her job, is helping cops kill less dogs. And she has had to shoot a dog in the line of duty.
I'm Dr. Sue Weaver, and I'm a retired police officer. And since that time, I went on ahead and got certified to teach police academy. Did that for 5 years while I was extending my education, and teach criminal justice at the university level. And I also continue to do police training nationwide on dangerous dog calls. And that's one of the things that's really important to me, because I was a canine officer. And at one point in my law enforcement career, I had to shoot a dog, and I also have been mauled by a dog that attacked me. So I have a lot of different viewpoints to bring into it. And I keep a kennel of show dogs as well. So I'm pretty familiar with dog behavior, but there's a lot of things that police aren't trained in. So I'd really like to do that training, help the officers, the dogs, and the public stay safe. This happened quite some years ago. There was a trailer park, and a woman went to her house, and there was an Australian Shepherd that did not belong to her sitting on the steps to her door. And she got out of her car, and the dog stood up and growled at her. So she got right back in her car and drove right next to the trailer park. Was a shopping center, and there was a payphone. So she called the police. So I came out. I met her, and she pointed out which was her trailer, and we verified that address. And so I went on up, and I had her stay back in her car. And I pulled up, and I was a good little distance from the porch, but I saw the dog, and I got out of my car, and I spoke to the dog, just like you do, you know, friendly-like. I said, hey, boy, hey, boy. And he didn't trot down the steps. He leapt off the landing and came running toward me. And I shot him in midair as he launched up from my face. And it was pretty traumatic for me because I'm such a dog lover. I really felt bad about that.
And that's like, what do you do? Like a dog leaps at you in the midair.
Anything that leaps at you in midair gets shot if I have a gun. That's not the difficult decision that we're looking at. We're looking at the people who are cleaning the house. It's interesting that she went deeper into the study once she became a victim. And that's probably something that most cops don't do, even if the perpetrator's human. Good on her for that.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll hear more from Dr. Weaver in a little bit here. It is, I think, one of the most fucked up parts of all this as the victim of a cop dog shooting, like as the owner of the dog in question, is that you've just lost a friend, but in the eyes of the law, I mean, think back to that word owner. Shooting a dog is the same as if the cops just broke your laptop.
Or kicked down your front door.
Or kicked down your front door. The police department responsible for the death of Stacy's beloved dog, you know, just had to pay for it.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I felt like it was. They gave me $5,000, and most of that went to my lawyer. And that was about it. And there were things saying that I couldn't come after them again, of course, you know, the normal just go away kind of thing. And yeah, that was about it. It was just, if something should come about that I find out new evidence, that I could not come after them, you know, sue them for anything else.
What's the new evidence? That the dog had known the cop before and that there was a prior relationship?
Yeah, the dog was selling drugs.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's or the cop was selling drugs to the dog and wasn't. Yeah.
Right. Wanted to erase a witness. Mm-hmm. I get that. If it had been like a dog sting, I get that.
Yeah. But no, it's like if the police body cam footage comes out and it turns out the police are saying, like, watch me take this dog's ear off or whatever, like, you can't sue after the settlement's been made. Which is why, I mean, for them, $5,000 to avoid a lot more money.
Yeah.
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 Which I guess is what they do with people, too, a lot of the time.
Like she said, she had a lawyer, which means that she would have not gotten a penny prior.
Yeah. Yeah. If she hadn't brought that in. And it's messed up from like all sides, because Dr. Weaver clearly loves dogs, dedicated a huge part of her life to trying to save more of them by training officers better. But after she shot a dog, like, she had to treat it as broken property.
So I loaded him up and took him out to the landfill. There was an animal pit at the landfill, and I had a key to the landfill. So I went out there and dumped the dog, went back to the station to write up a report, and the dog owner called, and she told me the color and description of this Australian Shepherd and where she lived. And she lived adjacent to that trailer park. So, have you seen the dog? Did anybody pick up the dog? And I said, yes, you need to come down to the station. And so she came down to the station, and I informed her of the dog's demise and why and what happened. And she was started crying and everything. And I said, you know, I could cite you, not only for having a dog at large, but for having a vicious dog. I said, I'm not going to cite you, but if you go get another dog, you need to secure your dog.
How else are you supposed to handle that situation? But also, like, it leaves a gross taste in my mouth. Because, like, I've had dogs all my life. Like, that's not how I would want any of my dogs to be disposed of after being shot.
It's a pretty harsh reality, but the fact is there are thousands of dogs.
Yeah.
We make them. We are at a point where we have so many dogs that the only time we really stand up for animals is when somebody else is killing them. Mm-hmm. And that's the worst, is that we don't do any preventative. For instance, why did they have to find the owner, or what did the owner have to call? Mm-hmm. Because the dog had no collar. And that may have presented a different look to begin with.
Yeah.
It's also sad that a city doesn't have an ASPCA or any sort of humane services that can come handle these. And that is the issue, is that we are sending the wrong people to do the job. So the job is kind of getting screwed up. I don't want a carpenter to do my surgery, even though they make incredible cuts.
Yeah. I mean, I did ask Dr. Weaver to kind of provide some educated context on exactly why dogs are treated this way sort of legally and what governs when a cop can legally shoot a dog. And it turns out, not fucking much.
When we kill a dog, it's like seizing property, and that violates somebody's Fourth Amendment rights to be secure in their person, papers, houses, and effects. The effects meaning property, like their dog. So we have that out there. Then we have this other federal case that says if the dog barks or moves, the police are justified in shooting the dog. And then we have some case laws out there that give police qualified immunity meaning that if they have to shoot the dog, like the case that you mentioned where the officer was on a pursuit and jumped into the backyard and the dog came, so he shot the dog. And then on Velo versus Ayer, in that case law, that case was appealed and said that the qualified immunity does not apply. So we have all these various laws out there, and it's very confusing for the police officers as to, well, what is correct? What do I need to do? So I think it should just be much easier to train them what to do based on how they see the dog behave or the cues that the dog is giving, the nonverbal body language that the dog is saying, I'm friendly, I'm afraid, or I'm getting ready to attack. Any of those. I think if we can get that information out there, it won't be so confusing, and it will help us a lot so that when officers aren't shooting dogs unnecessarily. And there are going to be those cases where, like when that dog launched at me, I had to shoot it. I didn't have anything else at the time. I didn't have any OC spray or the taser wasn't around then either. So the only thing I had was my baton, and like it was in my car. It wasn't on my duty belt. So I think if we have mandated training state by state, it will help.
And I think like that's part of it. Like it'd be nice if we could always have the ASPCA or whatever coming out to deal with dogs in situations like this. But like, there's so many dogs in the country. Like, there's no way cops won't come into contact with dogs. And so maybe part of it is they have to be trained on dog psychology, too.
This is the worst day for mail people, because if you're a mail carrier, you suddenly realize that that mace that you have is not nearly as effective. That's what you think. You think, well, if a post office carrier doesn't have to carry a gun and they seem to be able to effectively deal with very aggressive dogs on a daily basis and everybody gets home safe, then what's the difference between them and a cop? And the difference is nobody really cares if a postman gets bitten. But if a cop gets bitten, it's a big, big deal.
Yeah.
I do wonder how they would advise police officers, because they do seem to be able to get home safely, even though there are dogs literally patrolling neighborhoods looking for them.
I think the big difference is that like they go up to houses, but they don't bust into houses.
Right.
No mailman I've ever known has made a habit of like kicking in doors and stuff. I think that's like a big part of it, is that as long as police officers have a lot of reasons to be breaking into people's houses.
Yeah.
Dogs are going to be unhappy with that.
There's also the behavior of being an officer, which is that as soon as you arrive on the spot, you're supposed to be loud and imposing. Mm-hmm. And every dog, just like every person, is going to hear that and feel threatened.
Yeah. And also, you can't not be, as a person, you can't not be scared when a police officer shows up on the scene. Like,
right.
It's just nerve-wracking to have to deal with a police officer in any situation. And the dog's going to trigger off.
Everything is fine, officer.
You know, and I think it is important to acknowledge that a lot of police officers are dog lovers and are not happy with the legal status quo. When I told Dave that I thought the laws were pretty fucked up, he agreed entirely.
You're right. I mean, the reaction that you're having to that statement is the reaction of a normal, rational person. And it is a reaction because it's a perspective that completely deprives and strips dogs of the personification that we project on them, though. And so... I don't know. I don't have a great example. I used to date a girl who had like a cat, and she would just see the cat and she'd be like, look how sassy this cat is. Look at how she just sashays around. And I'm like, those are words to describe human behaviors. You're projecting them onto an animal. We have no idea why that cat maintains that posture as it walks. It's not necessarily a sachet. So much in that same regard, when you hear a legal document that says, oh, a person's dog getting shot, the only legal recourse they have against the government is to pursue it as a seizure of their property because you are depriving them of their property. And that's painful to hear, because if you're a dog person and you have pet dogs and you love them, you think of them more as an extension of the family. You don't view them as a piece of your property. On the other hand, they were purchased and they are free to be sold, and the conditions that a dog can live under are quite different than that of a human as far as what's legally tolerated.
And that's true. Like, yeah, it seems really messed up to me of dogs being treated as property when they're shot by police officers, but I've never complained about dogs being sold.
Right. Like, well, yeah. We do. We complain about puppy mills.
That's fucked up. Yeah.
And we complain about kill shelters. And mm-hmm. We have cities that really work hard to have a no-kill shelter while homeless people sleep outside. It's an amazing relationship that we have with animals, is that, you know, if it's got a face, don't eat it. And if it's cute and fluffy, then it's not to be consumed. And like he said, we do consider them to be human. But that changes when we are under attack.
Yeah. We have such a weird relationship with our pet animals to a point where it's kind of insane. I went to a fancy mall in New Delhi once, and it was slum all around it. So, like, people literally dying in the streets, missing limbs, like, he's just seeing gangrene as you're riding up to the mall. The mall is, there's guards with AK-47s and, like, razor wire walls around it so that the poor people can't get in. And you get into the mall, and, you know, 200 feet away from outside where all these people are dying in the street, there's, like, a gourmet pet food store. It's yeah. like, and there's also hundreds of dogs in the street yeah. that are poor dogs, but then there's the rich people's dogs. Like, it's so weird. There are dogs and cats out there that get treated better than 99% of the people on the planet, and there are dogs and cats out there that get shot and dumped in landfills. It's
amazing. As yeah. an ex-poor person, I got to tell you that one of the pet peeves of poor people or any marginalized group of people is seeing a dog in a restaurant or a dog in a coffee shop, because you think, man, when I was broke, I couldn't even go in there and get a glass of water. And here's this person with a full-size Rottweiler ordering a $7 cup of coffee. And it is a crazy, crazy juxtaposition to be a homeless person sitting in front of a restaurant, look through that window and watch a dog get scraps that cost $25.
Shit, you know, I'd never thought about that. Like, I was just so happy when I moved to L.A., and it's one of those places where seeing that people can take their dogs everywhere, because
no,
I love seeing dogs. You can take them a lot of, just not the beach.
Not legally. The beach.
You can take them to Ralph's.
You can legally bring your dog into Ralph's.
You can legally bring your dog anywhere if you lie and say it's a service right. animal.
Right, which also sets back all the handicapped community or the disabled community where he's got people lying.
Look, there's a lot of injustices in the
That's
world.
That's right.
I'm not going to not take my dog into Ralph's. Getting back to just the subject of, I guess we're kind of on the vague subject of bigotry. And when cops shoot anything, you can't separate bigotry from that. Not that bigotry is every police shooting, but I mean, a lot of cops are dog racists.
You hit a key point that you're right. We don't know what baggage the cops already have. Are they already afraid of dogs? Have they had some weird experience with dogs in the past that has influenced those decisions?
I mean, I'm sure it was fear-based. I can't imagine why it was anything other than that. My question always was he more afraid of my dog who was 13 feet away from him than he was a suspect who ran from him, who had yet been apprehended? He had not been cuffed. He had not even been patted down. He ran for a reason, and he turned his back on this man to shoot my dog.
And, you know, both Stacy and Valeria's dogs were big dogs, dogs that could be mistaken for pit bulls, which is a dog that's very commonly shot by police. Like, if your dog is a big dog, if it's a dog that looks threatening to someone who's scared of dogs, it's more likely to get shot. And I think it is important at this point that we kind of make it really clear why police officers might be terrified of dogs, rightfully. You might notice Dr. Weaver's voice is a little bit odd. It's because she was terribly, terribly mauled by a dog.
A fellow officer, my partner and I, were working the midnight shift, and he started having severe chest pains and difficulty breathing. So we had an ambulance take him to the hospital. And trying to be a friend, I say, is there anything I can do? And he gave me the key to his house. And he said, when you get off, go to my house and let my two dogs out the back and then put the food in the dish for them and feed them. I said, okay. Well, I had been over to his house once before, so I had actually met the dogs. But when I went to the house, the one dog was just really docile and just pretty much ignored me. But the other one did not like that I was in his house without the owner being there. And he was sitting there, and he was staring at me, and his mouth was closed, almost like his lips were pursed. And he just sat there and stared at me. And so I didn't take that to mean anything, which now I know does mean something. At any rate, doing like what I've been taught as a young girl, I bent forward and had him sniff the back of my hand. And when I bent over to reach my hand out for him to smell, he took hold of me. And I had 13 bites in my right hand and forearm. It broke my arm. And then I had another half dozen bites in the left hand and arm. And my thumb on the right hand was almost severed, and there was lots of exposed bone and broken fingers
It was awful.
There's justified reasons to be scared of dogs.
Certainly.
Yeah. But then, you know, we have more familiar cases, sorts of bigotry.
Question is, at no point did she reach for her weapon on this dog? Or was it because it was unexpected?
I think it was because it was unexpected. She was at her friend's house, which kind of ties into what Dave was saying earlier, is that you can't always predict the actions of a dog. And sometimes, like, this was a dog she knew before, a dog she'd met, but obviously this was a different situation. The owner's not there, and you can't say the dog's necessarily wrong, because it's not. It didn't want to cause pain. It was just doing what dogs do in a strange, scary situation.
I was a dog sitter, and I have to tell you that dogs that I have dog sat have attacked their owners, but never me. And it's the weirdest thing.
And you just got a friendly face to dogs.
I mean, I bring weed cookies for dogs. So.
Oh, getting them lit.
Please do not do that.
Yeah. Don't get dogs turned. It doesn't always end up well.
Nah.
That's not the only reason officers shoot dogs. Again, getting back to bigotry, especially in the case of pit bulls and anything that looks like a pit bull. Some police officers just think dogs like that need to die.
On his report, it says right away, these dogs are known for being aggressive, for being owned by gang members. So apparently I'm a gang member. You know, it's just, they just talk so bad about them. And it's just, I mean, it's sad. I mean, after I saw the video, it was just, instead of being feeling sad, it was just anger.
I guess this has only been a few months since things have happened and the justice system doesn't move quickly. I'm curious to see as to whether or not there's going to be any kind of justice done in this instance.
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, so I got charged for them running at large, for being aggressive, for not having their tags, because they would always rip them from each other when they would play, so they didn't have their tags on them. And then one of them, their license had expired like a month ago. So I got hit with all those charges. So we went to court about a month ago to fight those charges before we went with the civil case. And basically they dropped everything except for the aggression.
Yeah, so they dropped everything because first off, they said that her dog was a pit bull and it was not a pit bull. Second, obviously the video showed the police officer being a crazy dick.
It's interesting because she said it was a Staffordshire, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought Staffordshire is a type of pit.
It's part pit, but it's not enough to where she lives legally qualify as a pit.
Okay.
Yeah, because she had papers and stuff documenting that this was not, because pit bulls aren't allowed where she is.
And now, that being said, I also understand that pits are not the dogs that bite the most. It's Irish setters, right? It's golden retrievers?
That actually leads in perfectly. I asked Dr. Weaver both about dog racism, about like sort of the dogs people think are most dangerous versus the dogs actually do most of the injuring of people. And she answered your question pretty thoroughly, Brandon.
Now, when we look at dog bite statistics over a period of 20 years, the number of dog bites that are reported that are caused by a pit bull or a bully breed type of dog, like a Staffordshire Bull Terrier, American Staffordshire Terrier, a pit bull, a game bulldog, any of those types, those make up a very small fraction of the dog bites. In fact, they're not even in the top 10. However, with that being said, if you get bit by one of those dogs, the damage is more severe than the breeds that are in the top 10. And the number one biter is a dachshund. The number two biter is a chihuahua. The number three biter is a Jack Russell. All of these dogs are small, right? Cocker Spaniels are in the top 10. So there's several breeds that we consider family breed or small dog or pet. But the thing is that, you know, the use of force continuum, when we look in that, at that, if officers have had any training in dealing with dogs at all, or any knowledge of dogs, they're going to say, yeah, well, the pit bull can do serious bodily injury to me, where the little chihuahua probably will not. And another problem that we have is that we have people who are drug dealers who use pit bulls to guard their drugs. And they will have pits that are trained to sick, you know, where the people will sick them on the officers. So because of that, the officers do have more of a perception and bias against those types of breeds. I personally have four Rottweilers. I have three different breeds of purebred dogs, but four of my dogs are Rotties. The public perception of the breed is not good, but I can tell you that in my 31 years
of having a kennel of dogs of a total of 8 different breeds, that the Rottweilers are the most mellow, easiest dogs I've ever owned, period. But they don't have that perception. So, you know, I always take great care to train my dogs and make sure that they're always under my control. We had to make a police report at one point, and so the officer came to our house to take the report, and so our dogs were put up. So, you know, I take great care to do that.
I mean, that's maybe the biggest tragedy here is that she's right. Like, a pit bull, you got more to fear from a pit bull bite than a chihuahua, for damn sure. But at the same point, like, pit bulls are not even close to aggressive animals. They just are good at biting because they're mostly mouth.
Right. And that's the situation we found ourselves in, no matter what we talk about as a society, which is, have we created something that we can't control? Have we made something that was supposed to be used against the bad guy, or that is supposed to be used against people who would want to harm us? And now we're looking at something that harms us. And when it comes to dogs, it's always been noted that it is how you raise them and how they're bred. It's not the dog itself. And at this point, we've got a society full of dogs that are waiting to do their job as we have bred them to do. And that's unfortunate, because we wouldn't blame a shark. We would understand that a shark does what it does, and we wouldn't blame a snake. We'd understand that a snake does what it does. Whereas with dogs, we're like, well, we have this real deal where you do what you're supposed to do, just not to me or anybody that I like.
And this is, I think this is going to be like a continuing through line when we talk about this, is I think you can say the same thing about police officers. Like, you can say all the time, well, they're using too much deadly force, they're too easy to pull out their guns, but also, like, that's how a lot of police officers are trained, like the warrior cop thing. Like, you're at war with crime, like you're patrolling the streets of Baghdad. You've always got to be ready. Something might kill you at any moment, and it's your job to kill them first. Like, if you train police officers that way, they're going to be a lot more likely to shoot anything that comes at them. And, like, that doesn't absolve police officers for killing people, but it also means that, like, everybody who watches cop dramas, we're all a little bit culpable in this. Like,
we certainly are, in that, yeah. we have treated, the worst insult that we've ever given to cops is that we have made the majority of their job property protection. And then we send them to properties that have another animal doing the same job. So if cops were allowed to be more about solving murders and actually making sure that crime does not occur, instead of watching your bullshit mansion, mm-hmm. trying to recover your stolen Ferrari, then they may have a different take on their job altogether. We handicap them the same way we overburden teachers by saying, you're a teacher, but you're also a daycare center, and I'm not going to be able to pick my kid who is undernourished and underloved up until 7. We've doubled the jobs of everyone, cops and dogs alike. And when they bump into each other, they have to fight for that positioning to see who's the most relevant to the owner, which is the citizen.
Yeah.
And that sucks.
It does. And I have to think, how much less scared would it be to come into contact with a police officer if you knew the only two things that officer was doing was either making sure you weren't drunk on the road or solving murders?
That's right.
Yeah.
But because he's got to go out and make sure you didn't break some rich man's mirror
or don't have
on
pot.
His car, or that you don't have a drug that goes against the government's legalization and ability to tax it. I mean, if you look at what a police officer is forced to do, most of the time he is busting a shoplifter or a domestic because you can't keep your hands off each other. Their jobs need to be looked at in a way that gets them the kind of respect that goes with the power that makes them effective. Stop sending them to bullshit. Start sending them to things like this guy just tanked an entire company's stock so that he and his wife could buy an island. Don't send him to this kid's having a problem with their parents because their parents are heroin addicts and there just happens to be a dog there. I might kill your dog too, I'll be honest with you. We've asked them to do more, but we've diminished their role.
So Dr. Weaver just threw a bunch of stats at us, which makes sense. She's an expert on this topic. She's dedicated a huge amount of her life to it. Of course she would have those statistics. One thing that's really interesting to me though is that Stacy kind of took the loss of her beloved dog as a reason to start digging into the numbers too, and she had a lot of interesting stuff to say as well.
I want to say it always seems fear-based, but at the same time, I can say it's not. I've heard, you know, like I said, doing the research that I did within months, you know, I heard of these horrible stories of, like, dogs that were crated and were still shot by a police officer. You know, Kincaid was a pit bull, and a lot of the stories are fully breed-ish dogs. You know, American Bulldogs or Pit Bulls or Mastiffs, you know. But there's even little dogs, you know, Shih Tzus and Yorkies that cops have shot. And it happens within somebody's home. Sometimes they're in the right spot, but most of the time they're not even where they're supposed to, you know, the police aren't even where they're supposed to be. You know, they went to the wrong house. They raided the wrong house. I can't even imagine how many times it happens to dogs who are on the loose, dogs who have gotten out of their house. You know, if it's happening inside of people's houses or on their property, what's happening to the dogs who are lost? And a scared police officer just happens to come upon them. So I want to say it's, you know, it's fear-based, and hopefully some training would help that. But I think a lot of times it can't be that. We can't use that as an excuse because dogs are crated and being shot.
It's the fog of war defense, basically, which is that cops are under an intense amount of stress. Your dog seems way more important to you than it really is under those situations. And I totally get that. I get that cops are facing so much on a daily basis that your dog is like stepping on a daffodil as they come into your house to figure out what's going on. I get that.
Yeah, but again, it's clear that like if they were going into fewer houses, they'd be going into fewer of the wrong houses. There'd be fewer dogs getting shot. Like that seems like a pretty unequivocal statement that we could make, because it is much murkier when you start talking about why dogs are getting shot in cages. Because that's something that when I first hear about that, when I just hear someone say, oh, a dog was shot in a cage, I think, well, there's no possible justification for shooting a dog in a cage. But I went to our former cop and our cop sources with that question, and they just had more answers that made me go, well, shit.
Let me tell you, many of my dogs can get out of their cage. And I know I'm not the only one. I had a dog that was flown once, and it was in the airline, not the wire crate, but, you know, the plastic ones, the pet porter kennels that you can ship a dog on an airline. My dog got out of the crate. You know, the crate has to be big enough and a little extra size when they're being flown. They have to be high enough for them to stand up and easily turn around in there. They have to stand up without ducking their head and be able to fully turn around. And the dog curled up in the back, bowed her head forward, and sprung forward, and it busted the door right off of there. I use wire crates now, and 4 of my 7 dogs know how to get out of them. So I have to put a bolt snap to secure it. They know my chain link dog kennels, my dog runs for outside, they know how to open those gates. Dogs know how to open the door and let themselves in. So if I have a dog, if it were me, knowing that I know that if dogs want to get out of there, they can, and in a matter of seconds, you know, I might be inclined to shoot the dog if it was going pretty nuts in there. And years ago, we had Rottweilers. We had 2 Rottweilers at the time. And these dogs were really friendly. And they both had obedience titles. They were just, you know, really easygoing dogs. But the female really acted as though my little boy was her boy. She was really bonded to him. And my husband went to spank him, and the dog nailed him. I said, well, I guess you're not going to get spanked today. Not all the dogs in here. So if you were to arrest somebody and here's the dog barking, but it's in a cage, and you think, okay, well, the dog's in a cage, so nothing's going to happen. But if you go to arrest the person, that dog may be upset enough to find a way out of that cage.
That's a good point. Like I've never known a big dog that couldn't get out of a cage. You can't make a cage strong enough to keep a 200-pound dog in it.
What's amazing is that a dog should be able to stand up without ducking its head when it's being flown is not even a right that I have in first class. As soon as I stand up, I hit my head. So I love that airlines care more about the dogs than they do about the people on the above side of the plane. But I would also think that if you're a police officer and you're getting into a hostile situation, that noise is an issue and that a barking dog is nothing but a noise issue. So I can't hear you explain why I shouldn't take you to jail. And I also can't hear anybody coming up behind me. You would almost want to shoot a dog in a crate just to silence it so you could do your job.
Well, and it's fascinating that you bring that up unprompted, because I kind of asked Dave to sort of help me understand what it's like being a police officer raiding a house, to help me understand why a cop might shoot a dog in a cage and why it might not be crazy. Because clearly, crazy assholes are killing dogs. There was an officer in Baltimore 5-6 years back who cut a dog's throat in the middle of the street. That's lunacy. Never any. I'm just going to go ahead and say no situation ever justifies cutting a dog's throat in the middle of the street. There's no conceivable way.
True.
But there is a conceivable way that it might not be unreasonable to shoot a dog in a cage. And Dave, again, I really appreciate him taking on the role of kind of not defending cops shooting dogs, but helping to explain it, because it's critical to at least understand what the hell's going on in a house raid.
I'll tell you the reason I think it might be rationalized, and then I'll tell you my counter argument to that for why I don't think it's appropriate. Look, I was in this house. We went in. It's a known gang location. The person who answered the door had a gun in their waistband, but we were able to, you know, arrest them before they could get to it. Two guys in the back room had guns, and we were able to talk them out. Like, if it's just one thing after another, and there was a dude hiding in the closet, and that dude had a gun, and then there were two other guns on the table, and one dude had a gun, and he pulled, but it didn't work. Whatever crazy situations have happened, or whatever crazy elements of that situation have occurred up to that point, you might be able to rationalize saying, and with all this going on, Your Honor, I can't be dealing with a dog barking. It's distracting, and I don't even know if it's caged. Like, what's the deal with that cage? Is it a cage that if you just push as hard, it's going to break? Is it a cage designed for a dog that size? Is it a cage, this, you know, the kind that you just transport them briefly, or is this a true cage? And in that situation, you would still have an uphill battle, but I think you could rationalize, I couldn't deal with this distraction. I needed calm so I can make the best decisions. I need, you know, think about the number of times that the police have used force against someone and it was contested whether or not the police identified themselves. Did they clearly say were the police? Was the person given instructions? Were they given conflicting instructions? Was one guy yelling, don't move, and the other guy saying, put your hands up, and now you're in this situation? Was like, well, what do you want me to do, guys? Am I going to get shot for putting my hands up right now? Those happen, and if you can't communicate clearly with someone because a dog is barking, I could see that as being perceived as a threat. I've never had that exact situation play out, but I've been into houses plenty of times where there was loud music playing when we came in, a movie on, the TV's just at high volume. I've never shot the TV, but I might unplug it or try to turn it off. That's a pretty normal thing I'll try to do, but obviously dogs don't work that way.
That's the case. There's two analogies. You can say, you know, dogs are like landmines, and we send people in to go sweep for landmines because you might not step on one, but if you do, it's a life-altering decision that you make, so we're not sure where they're buried when it comes to dogs. And the same is with a syringe. In a doctor's hand, a syringe will save your life. It'll pull you from the brink of death. But in a junkie's hand, somebody who's got a chemical dependence, somebody who's shooting heroin, the syringe is the tool that ends their life.
Yeah.
And the dog is the same situation. We don't know necessarily what kind of dog it is because we don't know what kind of situation it is. If you're a criminal. If you're not a criminal and you're just a homeowner, those cases seem to me like there should have been a little bit of forethought going into that situation.
I mean, it's clear that there are situations where cops are justified in shooting dogs. It's clear that there's a lot of situations where cops are not justified in shooting dogs. And both of our law enforcement sources were really clear about the fact that way too damn many dogs are being shot by cops. They all brought up different statistics, but they painted, you know, pretty much the same picture.
There was basically a statistic I came across where this, since there's no central repository, we really don't know exactly, the estimates were something like 30 a day, which seems like ungodly high. I mean, that's mind-blowingly high.
I brought up to both of them the ASPCA's statistic that they estimate that half of all police firearm discharges are dog-related. Neither of them had heard that before. Neither of them was surprised by that. Here's Dr. Weaver.
I have not heard that statistic. What I have heard relating to that, is tangentially related, is that law enforcement officers shoot a dog somewhere in America every 90 minutes.
And Mike had a pretty compelling explanation for why half of all police firearm discharges, that might not be at all exaggerated.
Yeah, half of all police firearms discharges. Well, okay, that statistic in and of itself is a little bit troubling to me because cops fire their weapons way less now than ever. Because there are some, still not perfect, but we have much better tools at our disposal between tasers and other non-lethal weapons. We tend to operate in larger groups than they used to. I mean, if this was the 70s and you're just, you know, some guy out there walking a beat with a six shooter, you probably will end up shooting more because you don't have a lot of alternatives when something goes wrong. So in other words, if you're telling me half of police discharges are to shoot dogs, that actually doesn't come as a big shock because we don't fire warning shots. You should never pull your gun out and fire it in the air and yell police stop. Like, that was actually done in certain jurisdictions before that became pretty much viewed as insane. So I could kind of understand if the percentage of discharge of their weapons that accounts for dogs getting shot, if that's on the rise, I suspect it's because the number of reasons they're shooting their gun for other reasons is on the decline, and therefore it's just going to occupy a larger portion
We should say that we reached out to the Cat Union for their take on this, and they denied any shootings ever occurred. It's just a very powerful, powerful lobby.
Yeah. It's the NRA and the National... I can't think of anything other than National Pussy Association, but that's probably...
Which I am a great member of.
dues paying.
It's interesting because, yeah, you're not going to run into any other household pets that get shot, quite honestly. No one's ever had to kill an iguana or kill a parrot or take out a fish tank.
No, and if you ever hear about a cop shooting a cat, like, everyone's going to assume, well, that's just a crazy person.
Right,
like,
right.
Even though I think a cat might just do it out of malice. I can conceive of that.
Cats are a little bit more vicious, I think. Yeah. And they can get there faster, mm-hmm. quite honestly.
Mm-hmm. And man, they could open up an artery in your neck if they really wanted to.
Yeah, they've done a great job of suppressing this story.
But this kind of all leads us up to the big question you asked when we first started talking about this, Brandon. How can our listeners...
How can I not get shot?
Oh, no, I can't answer that question,
okay,
man. You are way above my pay grade now. But how can our listeners stop their dogs from being shot by rampaging cops? How can we have both police officers and unshot dogs? I went to Dr. Weaver with this question. Her training techniques have a proven ability to save dog lives. I actually heard about her work through the Arlington, Texas Police Department. She's part of the reason why they went from 6 dog shootings in 2010 to just 1 in 2016.
One of the things that I do is I teach about the use of force. And there's case law regarding that, Tennessee versus Garner. And we can use reasonable proportional amount of force, but this case law is set up for human beings, okay? We can use lethal force when we perceive a threat of serious bodily injury or death. So when an officer sees a dog coming toward them, and they have this other case law from federal court that says if the dog barks and moves at all, then you can use lethal force. So that's really contrary to what we need to be doing. So I talk about that issue, and I said, okay, so you're out on patrol. What kind of tools do you have in your tactical toolbox? So you have your OC spray, you have your taser, you have your baton, and, you know, you have a variety of things. And, of course, one of the biggest indicators or tools that you can use is your voice and your body and your body language. So we talk about those, and then I take particular pictures of dogs, and I'll say, okay, this is the case. This is what's happening with this dog and this situation. What is the appropriate non-lethal tool to use? Dogs that are relaxed are a safe dog. And many dogs, I don't care if it's a poodle or how friendly the dog is, if they see somebody in uniform, just like the postman, dogs hate the postman. They hate that uniform. So if an officer comes onto a property with a dog, the dog sees the uniform, and even though the person thinks the dog's totally fine, it probably is not fine.
Yeah, apparently dogs are natural anarchists.
Also, dogs try to make it so you don't get bills. This is why they're man's best friend, is they keep the postman away.
Mm-hmm. And they try to keep the police away.
They try.
Yeah.
They try.
Yeah. I brought up Stacy's case to Dr. Weaver. The cops hopped into her backyard and shot her dog, and I wanted to know, is there anything she could have done to protect that dog?
Yeah, that situation is pretty difficult. It's really pretty difficult to not end up shooting at the dog. There's so many cases where an officer goes into the yard, and as he's going up to the door, the dogs come around from the side or the back and, you know, go to attack the officer. So one of the things I try to teach officers is to, if you have a call to that house, have the dispatcher tell the people that called, if they have a dog, to secure the dog where the officer can come and take your report. But in this type of situation, like you're talking about, there's no way of knowing that or countering for that. If there's two dogs, it's pretty easy to see who is the alpha dog, who's the one that's serious, and which dog is the follower. And if you take out the alpha dog, the following dog, the more submissive dog, will slink away. And many times if you just put your hand up in the air, you know how, like, when an officer is directing traffic and they want you to stop, they put their hand up, the palm facing you. Many times if a dog is coming towards you, running at you, if you stop and in a very stern voice put your hand up and say no, and I mean a real command voice, no, like that, the dog will veer away. It's a possibility that that may have worked.
When she said no like that, it made me sit down and shit. So she's good. She's really good.
It's a mess in here.
Yeah.
So Dr. Weaver's clearly optimistic about our ability to make cops and dogs safer around each other. Dave is not.
I think the solution typically, whenever somebody asks me about a question in this general sphere, my response is, I agree, we need to focus on that training. We got to come up with smart training that reflects the actual circumstances on the streets, so to speak. But in a scenario like this, I really have a hard time coming up with something that I think would have a true impact. I think we could go through the motions and we can say, all right, and now from now on, every police officer in this district is going to receive 2 hours a quarter or 4 hours a quarter of mandatory animal body language training, and we're going to discuss options, blah, blah, blah. But sadly, it just, those things, they don't end up being applied in the field, whether they can't or it's just so inconvenient. And if you were out walking your dog, what steps would I recommend someone take to protect their dog? I would honestly just, you know what I would do is I would say, you know, officer, I've got this dog. If you'll permit me, I'll go over here and tie it to something, maybe, if that's an option. Ugh, or, dude, I wish I had a more compelling answer, but this is, like, pretty much a nightmare. So this is, like, a situation where if somebody asks me, what would I do if somebody speaks a foreign language and they don't understand what's being said or something? It's like, well, I don't know. Everyone involved, hopefully, will maintain a cool head and they'll think logically before they proceed. But it sounds like you've already spoken to people who have sadly had to endure this, and I imagine that their perspective on it is not one in which they thought the cops did a very good job or were very reasonable. Am I correct in that assumption?
He is. Valeria thinks that the cop who straight up killed her dog just wanted to kill something, and the video evidence, you know, does seem to back that up.
That video is just, even after Angelo gets shot, the officer is just talking smack, just saying, oh, I'm gonna get that bitch again. This is like just talking, just nasty. Like before he shoots him, he asks one of his other colleagues, I guess, for a little catch pulse. One of them says, I think I have one. He doesn't even give him a chance to take him one when he shoots him. I mean, he was just out there, I feel like, to just kill him.
It was pretty fucked up. But the police department did what they always do, which is circle the wagons and defend their own.
They always say no comment, no comment, no comment. Like, before I got a hold of the police video, they were saying that they had attacked someone, that they were being aggressive, and then after the video popped up, they stopped commenting. But, yeah, because I know I had Channel 7 interview me, Channel 9, Channel 4. Like, there was, you know, stories with them done. And before the video came out, I mean, they made me look so bad. But then after the video came out, they stopped commenting.
Yeah, Dave was pretty open about the fact that some cops who shoot dogs seem to be doing it for a reason beyond fear or necessity. You know, that they're just fucked up.
Yeah, it's brutal to read. I mean, the poor dog was shot, like, repeatedly. It's a bloodbath.
He's talking about a December 2016 raid where two pit bulls were shot. One was shot repeatedly just for barking during a raid on a home the police wrongly suspected as the center of a heroin distribution thingamajigger.
My first response as I was reading it, or before I got to the actual document, as I was reading kind of the coverage of it, I thought, you know, if I was in that situation, I would have just held my arm out, let the dog bite me, or whatever it's going to do. You know, I don't want to get bitten horribly by a dog and have scarring, but I would probably, I don't know, I would just come up with some solution.
He does think the reaction of a lot of cops to one of their own shooting a dog might sometimes be worse than when they shoot a person. I found what he had to say here particularly fascinating because he gives a pretty cogent explanation for why cops always back each other up in these shootings.
Everyone has the presumption of innocence legally, but from a personal perspective, let's put it this way. If my office, if we did a search warrant and a person got shot, let's say I don't know anything else about the situation. I know that there were, say, two search warrants, and at the other location, somebody tells me, oh my gosh, you know, Robert Evans just shot some guy. I wouldn't immediately be like, you know, let me talk to Robert, make sure he's doing okay. I wouldn't even ask you what the circumstances was. I would immediately just assume that you were like, you know, in some horrible situation. I'd be like, you know, do you need anything? Is there anything I can do to help you? Like, I would view it almost like you're the victim, because generally shooting a person is like probably the most traumatic thing that in law enforcement, not that you will necessarily do that, but if it does happen, that's generally one of the most traumatic things. If I heard the same exact situation play out, but they said, yeah, Robert shot a dog at the house, I'd be like, what is this dude? What? And if anything, I'd be like, what? So what happened? Why are you shooting dogs? Like, I would immediately be, even as a fellow law enforcement, and I'm supposed to, you know, according to the media, I'm supposed to toe the thin blue line and back up a cop, but I would have a lot of questions. I'd be like, dude, you can't just be shooting dogs. Are you insane? What? Where did the bullet go? How many times did you shoot? What was, like, I would have a lot more, I would be a lot more scrutinizing of their decision just because it was a dog, because I'm like, we're not in the business of adjudicating the behaviors of dogs. We're here to enforce laws as they apply to humans.
Which is not shocking, because if you shoot a police dog, you have shot a police officer. So we do know that the understanding is that a dog is a sacred and wonderful animal.
Yeah.
Because even police officers feel like their dogs are special.
Yeah, that's a really good point to make, is that the dogs that they shoot are property, but when one of their dogs gets shot, it's a cop. And I don't think it's wrong to treat a police officer dog as a police officer. But I do think there's got to be some sort of line between saying, okay, dogs have the full rights of people when they're shot, and saying, they're not a laptop.
Right, and they do make bulletproof vests for police dogs, mm-hmm. because they understand that in a situation that gets hectic, dogs get shot.
Yeah.
So they take extra measures to ensure the safety of their animals, and what we're trying to figure out is a way to get them to do that for our animals as well.
Yeah, and I wish I could say that at the end of this, I had a clearer idea of what the road to that is. I think Dr. Weaver makes some good points. Like, there's certainly no way behavioral training is going to hurt. But, like, at the end of the day, I don't think there's any way to stop this other than police officers coming into contact with dogs in people's homes less often.
It'd be nice if there was a branch of the police department that actually handled the dog,
mm-hmm.
that just was for that. Just like they have dogs that handle drug sniffing and bomb sniffing. It'd be nice if they had maybe the same officer could do that. He's got dog on him. He smells like a dog. Mm-hmm. Maybe that same officer could approach the situation and say, I know this situation. I know what I'm doing. I've been trained to do this.
See, it is harder. Like you say, we should have a whole chunk of the police dedicated to dealing with dogs. And on one hand, I can hear people being like, well, that's unreasonable. But also, like, we do that with drugs.
We do that with sex.
We do it with sex. We do it with alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. Yeah. Like, we have financial crimes. Like, there's a type of cop for everything but dogs.
And it would be nice as a society if we equipped officers with the resources they needed, including a separate division just to handle the pets that we have.
Yeah, what if there was, instead of SWAT teams, there were whole teams of cops just wearing, like, suits covered in beef jerky.
Exactly.
Like, bite-proof suits covered in jerky, and we just send them into houses first.
Or that all dogs that were cop dogs were female dogs, and that we sent the dog in heat mm-hmm. into a residence first, because I don't know about you, but if there's one thing I'll stop crime for, it's sex.
Mm-hmm. Or we just knockout gas the whole neighborhood, and then everyone's asleep when the cops. That's how we get a dystopia.
Something tells me that's already happening. Stay safe out there, dogs. Cracked Gets Personal has been produced by Robert Evans, Brett Rader, and Alex Schmidt. It was engineered and edited by Brett Rader. Coming up next week, four garbage men tell us what it's like picking up trash for a living in the U.S. and abroad.
They used to put in the trash can fish guts. So fish guts not only are fishy, stinky smelling things, they're also liquid, so they're very heavy. It was difficult for me to lift them up, and sometimes you spill fish juice all over the place, which means all over you.
For Robert Evans, I'm your host, Brandon Johnson. Thank you for listening.
Hi, everybody. Chris Gethard here from Beautiful Anonymous. Wanted to let you know about an episode of my show. It's pretty unusual, because as a co-host is Katie Couric, which you may not expect, because I tend to do really dumb things.
Well, I have, like, a weird emotional attachment to Chris, just because I've watched, you know, people eat burritos off of his belly.
Now, Katie doesn't know what that refers to, and you're making me look real crazy. Now you're putting the screws to me.
I'm sorry, Chris.
Once did an episode of my TV show where they built a burrito on my belly and ate it. It was called the Belly Burrito. And
I'm really hungry, so right now that sounds incredibly appealing to me.
Well, it'll make you not hungry. Yeah. So, thanks for throwing me under the bus on that one, Amelia. Making me look bad for like Katie Couric. Thanks so much for putting up with me. Being in your feed right now, maybe you check out the episode, and maybe you dig it. Maybe you dig it so much you subscribe to Beautiful Anonymous on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you listen. All right, thank you so much. I'll stop bugging you.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.